Junior Kumar. The junior commander, I know you have a program of why this moderation the program.
That you have the of
the junior commander. Mr. Kumalo, this is the subcommittee of the Committee on Communication we have been appointed in terms of the National Assembly rules, which allows that you can set up a subcommittee. So this subcommittee is set to focus on this appointment process. I will, without waste of time, introduce members. And thereafter would then allow you to a short introduction which leads you to a 10-minute presentation that you would make based on the topic you have chosen, as you have been requested to. We will then take questions from members. We allow 5 minutes maximum engagement, which will also include your answers to the questions that the members would have asked you. So having said that, let me then quickly introduce members. We have Honorable Kubeka, Honorable Machozi, then Honorable Faku, Honorable Fandam, Honorable Dr. Ndlozi, we have Honorable Molala, who's now walking in. So that's that with regards to our own introductions. As I said, I will now give you an opportunity to briefly introduce yourself, understanding that we have already received your CVs, but then get to the presentation in the 10 minutes. So you can start. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks for inviting me. I think just a quick background of myself. I've got an economics background. I'm passionate about the competition law, competition economics. I've cut my teeth at the Competition Commission, but however, I've also had interest in the ICT sector. Hence my move about just over 4 years ago to ICASA. So I'm currently working for ICASA as the head of policy research and analysis. Just quick background, I'm originally from the East Rand of Gauteng. I've gone to school all sorts of places. But as I say, my passion is economics, and especially applied economics. Now, moving to the presentation. So I was asked to give a South African context on four issues, the first being convergence vis-a-vis single sector regulation, the second being dimensions of regulatory effectiveness, and then institutional structures as well as self-regulation vis-a-vis co-regulation. Just dealing with the issues of convergence. So we used to have a way of using different technologies in isolation. However, over time, these technologies are actually merged. Example I'm giving here is where you now have a cell phone that you use for, streaming content, you use it for making calls, you use it for social media, etc. So that's convergence, because you now have all these different content and making calls over just one device. So in terms of the South African regulatory framework, so when ICASA was formed, it was formed out of then what was the regulator for telecoms and the regulator for broadcasting. That was the aim, was to actually deal with the issue of convergence. You wanted to have a regulator that would deal with both, for example, broadcasting and telecommunications, and also in this case, postal issues as well. So the issue was really about dealing with the convergence and having a convergent, converged regulatory body. So if you had a single sector regulator, they would have the usual, the original IBA and such. So that's the sort of thing context. And then with the second point around the dimensions of regulatory effectiveness, so the ITU lists three things. It lists structural independence, which basically means where a regulator is independent and can't be captured by whether it be political or industry. It also talks about financial independence. So now you deal with the how the regulator is funded, because that also talks to independence as well, and actually perceptions of independence, because it's not just it being independent, but there must be also a perception of it being independent. The third is functional effectiveness, which basically, how I would explain it is that the regulator has to be given the tools to do its work. It has to be given the power, it has to be given the resources, you know, staff must be developed, and it has to deal with also issues of governance, for example, conflict of interest. So if you look at it in terms of where we are as South Africa, in terms of those three pillars, so ICASA is established in terms of Section 192 of the Constitution, so which actually guarantees its independence. So the Constitution says that it should be an independent broadcasting regulator. So we I guess in a way we could say that box is ticked. Regarding financial independence, so the funding of the ICASA is done through an appropriation by Parliament through the Ministry of Communications. That funding, what at least to my experience, has been quite a challenge, because there are cases in other countries where regulators are funded through appropriations, but they also can keep some of the revenue that they generate from licensing, for example, the revenue that they generate from licensing spectrum, as an example. So I think there is a need to deal with the issues of funding for ICASA. And then the last pillar, which is about functional effectiveness. So the ICASA Act is clear about exactly what are the powers of the authority. It also deals with issues around how the council is appointed, how a councillor can be removed, etc. So we actually have that in the legislation. So I would say that at least those are there, except, as I'm saying, the issues around the funding model for ICASA. And then in terms of institutional structures, so the ITU looks at three functional areas. So it looks at a policy function or policy making function, which is in this case would be the responsibility of the ministry, and then it looks at a regulator, and then it looks at then the regulated entities. In our case, so we have policy that is made by the Ministry of Communications. We have ICASA as a regulator. Then of course we've got the regulated entities. However, we also, because there's also a responsibility for ICASA to regulate competition in the industry. So that part of its responsibility is shared with the Competition Commission. So So there's concurrent jurisdiction between ICASA and the competition authorities when it comes to issues of regulating competition. So I guess that's the difference, is that you don't have a regulator that is not responsible for regulating competition as well, but you have those powers given to the authority, but also of course sharing that with the Competition Commission as well. And then the last point around self-regulation versus co-regulation. So I've made an example here of the National Integrated ICT Policy White Paper. So the White Paper did not really outside talk about the development in terms of how, for example, over-the-top services, whether they should be regulated or not. Platforms like Facebook, WhatsApp, etc., were not explicitly said that they would be regulated. So in that way, you could then say that these are platforms that are self-regulating, because obviously it's their reputation is important to them. People use these platforms because I guess they trust them, and therefore it's in their interest to protect their reputations as well, and especially to protect people's privacy, and to address any concerns that users may have on the platforms. The way I've then crafted the comparison with the core regulation is that I said that it's about where you have a community of people who use a platform and they have some sort of a rating or ranking scale about inputs that are made into the platform. And on the basis of that, there's content that is promoted and then there's content that may be actually even excluded from that platform. So thank you, Chair. I think that was my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kumani. I'll now allow members to engage with the presentation. Let me start with Honorable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome, Baba Kumari. And also thank you for your presentation. Baba Kumari, under the converse regulation versus single sector regulation, I would like just to understand ukuthi, you know, most ICASA, there is this interest of conversion with other entities. Do you believe that whatever that they are presenting on the issue of conversion is going to assist or is going to work for conversion those entities? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So I think I'm maybe making an example of, because one of those entities is the FPB. You know, the FPB's work is about classifying content, giving guidance on age restrictions and all of that. I see that as very different from what ICASA as an economic regulator does. Those are very two different things. I'm not saying that it wouldn't work, but I'm just saying from an economic regulation point of view, ICASA does work that would entail, for example, as I was saying, looking at competition issues, looking at access to facilities, infrastructure sharing, etc. But the FPB is about classifying content and actually putting, ICASA's work when it comes to content goes only to as far as looking at, for example, quotas for local content, issues around advertising, on TV, and issues around developing community broadcasting. But when we talk about classifying content, I'm not sure if it's really well placed within the CASA. Well, we can combine the CASA and the FPB, but we still have two different. This work will be done. I don't see any benefit of the FPB being part of the CASA because they'll still be doing what they're supposed to do. You know, that won't change how we. The only thing is that, of course, maybe someone can then say, well, if you talk about convergence, given that you have, let's say, like making an example of a cell phone and access to content through a cell phone, maybe if you take it to that level. But even then, because I would be the one who would have assigned spectrum for that cell phone to work and type approved the cell phone. But because, from an age restriction of content point of view, of course, it will be worried about cyber security. I think that's the one bit where, there is the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, which gives the CASA some sort of room to deal with issues of cyber security. But maybe if you look at it from that point of view as well, I would say that it does make sense. I hope I've answered the question.
Thank you, Chair. Just to have a follow-up on the question that Audra Bukubeka has asked, we are talking about the merger and their legal implications. Because ICASA is established under Section 192 of the Constitution. So what is your view with regards to that? And then my second question is, I'm more interested about the funding model that you are talking about. You are saying that maybe it seems that you are not comfortable with the current funding model that ICASA is using. Maybe which funding model do you think will be okay? There's a lot of criticism when it comes to the regulator in terms of capacity. Yeah, and witnesses, maybe. Do you agree with that and why? Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you. I think the question around the merger of the FPB and the legal implications for that. Well, my reading of Section 192 says that there should be an independent regulator for broadcasting to ensure a diversity of views. So I'm not sure if classification. I don't look at it unless maybe you're looking at it from a point of view of whether it is the censorship or something. But I look at it as protection of especially minor children. So, of course, if you will be merging the entities, you have to amend the history to give effect to that measure. But, Section 192, I think it's very specific about protecting diversity of views, especially when it comes to broadcasting. And then regarding the funding model, so I think the challenge is that the sector that we regulate is very fast moving, and these are things if you look at the digital platforms that are actually starting to actually have dominant positions of dominance as well. Even in other countries, these issues are being grappled with. I mean, there are countries that are still trying to find regulatory mechanisms to deal with these issues. So the problem with that, with how ICASA is funded currently is that you can't, for example, do R&D as ICASA just for so that you keep up with the developments in technology. You don't have that money. So you need to be able to have people who can sit and actually do R&D, just like what operators do. And so if ICASA were, for example, be allowed to keep a portion of what they, because ICASA raises billions of rands. So if at least a portion of that could be set aside for ICASA to start being very proactive in how it conducts, because that would inform also the regulations that it develops. It's important to really develop the skills capacity. It's important to do regular research. It's important to do regular market reviews. I know there's been a criticism before that the ICASA does not do enough market reviews. But it's also about putting the money for you to be able to start seeing the results of the work, because you need people who, you need the staff complement that's going to actually deal with the, doing research for the sake of research, because that research informs decision making. And I think that's been the challenge, is that you get the money that you get, and that money sometimes is not enough. Thank you.
Mr. Khumalo, what sets your soul on fire?
I think it's impact. I cut my teeth at the Competition Commission, so I'm very passionate about work that is fulfilling, because it's got a result that you can see. It's a tangible result that you can see. So when I joined ICASA about 4 years ago, one of the things that I advocated for, which we then actually started putting in our APPs, was to have a regular, or every year at least, we should conduct a market, an impact assessment on a particular market. Because you also want to see, you don't want to just churn out regulations, but you also want to go back on a regular basis and actually test the impact of those regulations. So what sets my soul on fire is seeing results.
I like that very much, because I think it's important to be passionate about what you do. Because sometimes I always try and explain why I'm asking a particular question. I know some of my colleagues don't understand, think I talk too much, because I want you to get a sense of why I'm asking the question, so it doesn't seem like it's without reason. I'm trying to firstly get a sense of who you are as a person, because I think it's important that we get the right kind of people on board, so because sometimes you get a person who's just there. So I'm really glad to hear that you want to see impact, you want to see results, because that means you're a results-orientated person. So if tomorrow we said, Mr. Khumalo, you're a chairperson of the ICASA board, what is the first thing that you do? Something completely different from what has been done. What would be the first item on your agenda?
That's a good question. I'll tell you what frustrated me when I first joined ICASA. It was about using our resources the best way we can and in the right way. The regulation-making processes at ICASA, or the regulation-making powers, are given to the council. And my understanding, of course, in terms of the ICASA Act is that the council can't delegate those powers. So council has to come up with regulations. It can't take that responsibility and delegate it. So then you then have this number of council committees that are supposed to do or develop these regulations. So the frustration with that is that, so someone like me who's got an extensive experience of competition law and competition economics, so when I joined the organization, that was what I wanted to bring to the table, my experience of competition law. However, I then actually found that this work that is being done, is being done through these council committees, and sometimes you're not even part of those council committees because you're busy running. So you're busy running a division. You've got so much on your plate because you're running a division. So then the problem is that you then have also experience and expertise that you may have within the organization but you're not using. So I think the first thing I would say is maybe somehow, because I would say that it's also a way of how that bit about delegation of regulation making has been interpreted. I think it's been interpreted very too strictly. You'd want a situation where you have an agile organization that, because finally a regulation that is going to be published would have been approved by a council. Council can take that and actually get the skills within the organization to quickly work on doing whatever work that they need to do. And then obviously the approval processes can then get a final approval by council, because it's council who would then be publishing that regulation as an authority regulation. So I've found that to be frustrating. I think we could improve on that, because then I think it would also speed up the rate at which we do work.
Honorable Ntozi.
Am I the last one?
No, it's your turn.
Oh, I was waiting for some quick piece of information. Do you mind if I go after with yours, with the greatest respect? Yeah, I will check.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening, yes. Good evening, Mr. Kumari. What is your understanding of the recent data service market inquiry report in terms of providing South Africans with fair, lower priced and reasonable data cost? And how do you think would ICASA strengthen its role in trying to ensure that fair practice prevails over unfair competition in the market?
Thank you. Without preempting, because obviously the work on the market review that ICASA is doing is still work that is ongoing, is work in progress. So I didn't want to sit here and preempt that. But I can say that which is now public knowledge. That the discussion document that was published by ICASA actually found that despite a lot of concentration, especially when you look at the sites, mobile sites, at different areas of the country, and in a way you find that there's a player that is very much prevalent present in a particular area of the country, and you have another player that is present in a different area of the country. So if you think about promoting competition, you actually want to see that players are actually, you know, going. Of course, they can reach different areas through roaming agreements, for example. But we really found that there's a lot of this high concentration in different parts of the country. I think that's where we are. We're trying to actually look at what is the impact of that concentration. As I'm saying to you, I don't want to preempt eventually what's going to happen, because we've published that discussion document, you know, waiting for comments on it. We'll have to look at whether competition is actually effective or not. I think your second question, I don't remember, if you can remind me.
My second question was, how do you think would ICASA strengthen its role in trying to ensure that fair practice prevails over unfair competition in the market?
Okay, yeah, so I think for someone to say that there's unfair competition, as I said, I'm very much a fact-based person. So for me to say that there's unfair competition, I would have to have done some sort of a market study or an investigation. I can't just say, you know, I'll give an example. So a market can be concentrated. You can have a few players. But as long as a market is contestable, there may not be an issue. Because the big issue is about whether there's barriers to entry, and those barriers to entry are actually keeping that concentration. So in other words, the incumbents are not faced by potential competition through entry. So if that's the case, then we've got a problem. But if a market is contestable, which means once, you know, incumbents start charging monopoly prices, it's very easy for entrants to enter and actually reduce those margins, then that's fine. So you'll need to actually do proper research, look at facts, look at whether barriers to entry are surmountable or not. And of course, the role of the ICASA is to make sure that barriers to entry are reduced. Not only barriers to entry, also barriers to exit as well, by the way, because an investor would want to be able to enter a market, but if it doesn't work, they should be able to then to exit as well. Thank you.
No, that's fine. So there are several quick questions I want to go through. Just quick clarities in relation to where you've been.
Yes.
So you worked in the presidency.
Yes.
As what? Which president?
I was actually a
sir, I'm going to be a bit rough
because
I don't have time. Which president? Name?
It was at the time of, I think, President Mbeki.
Mbeki?
Yeah. It was a while ago.
Who was the minister?
Can I explain myself? Is it fine? I was a freshly graduated master's student. I was at the presidency as a graduate trainee for just about a month or two. So I didn't stay that long. So
okay.
I hear what you're coming from, but it was not. I didn't stay there that long.
You worked for the Reserve Bank. What did you do there?
At the Reserve Bank, I was an economist. I worked at the International Economy Unit. My job there was basically, I was a junior economist, so my job there was to monitor economic developments in different parts of the world and put them into a report.
So there at ICAC, what can you say are your greatest achievements? Maybe one.
One?
Yeah, I mean you were leading policy.
Yes.
What's your greatest achievement?
I think the one achievement that I'm proud about is the fact that when I joined the CASA...
by the way, when was this?
It was in 2015, yeah. So when I joined the CASA, there was a complaint we had to deal with, which had to do with the access to facilities. So as you know, there are regulations around facilities leasing. In terms of operators sharing facilities. So I actually led the investigation of that nature, even though it's now still in the legal pipeline. However, I actually led the team that investigated that matter. And it was, I'm saying it's an achievement because it was the first time that ICASA had actually dealt with actually looking at investigating a matter that had to do with the
Now, a lot of what ICASA has been doing has been had very less impact on the transformation of the broadcasting sector, the transformation of the telecom sector. I mean, I'm talking fundamental achievement here in the interest of what this institution ought to do. It's part of the Chapter 9 institutions supporting democracy. The democratization that has to happen in telecoms, in the broadcasting sector. So you can't give me one big policy achievement that you led in that regard. I mean, we're talking, you being a counselor, I'm not asking telecom and MTN to share facilities or infrastructure. It's inevitable, by the way, with 5G technology. But policy perspective-wise, one achievement, I mean, that warrants you to take on this huge role. I'm looking for a sign of an improvement from a manager to leadership.
Yeah, well, you know, the example that I was making about introducing regular impact assessment, I actually, advocated for that to be done. And the reason for that is that if you are talking about the impact that you're talking about, you actually need to look at the impact of your regulation and whether those regulations are fulfilling.
Did you ever challenge, for instance, mass care regulations? They were very reactionary for the SABC.
You see, that's where I'm coming from.
No, you're not coming from there. I'm asking you, did you ever challenge them? Yes or no?
No. I'm getting there, actually. I'm not coming from there. Let me tell you.
I don't have time. You are doing an injustice to me. You are talking about the different impact of regulations. I'm asking you a specific question.
Yes, I'm trying to answer.
About challenging. I said to you, I'm looking for a quality because those things of managers is a different regime and level of responsibilities. Once you rise to a counselor, you have to be an industry leader. Did you ever challenge some unfair reactionary policies that have been in conversation for long, for instance, mass care regulations. If you haven't done with that, you can give me another big thing that you dealt with.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry, that's my question.
Well, I'm trying to answer you, but I don't know if you want a yes or no answer, but I can answer you.
It would be great if you said, yes, I have, then you
yes,
say
I,
an answer.
Well, the impact assessments that I was talking about, one of them that we did was on mass caring, and it's now led to us actually reviewing those regulations. That came directly from the division that I had. We started by looking at whether those regulations...
When was this?
About 3 years ago. So that work is currently being conducted on reviewing those regulations.
For 2 years. Yeah. And then any other, in relation to the telecom sector, those are the big guns now.
If you can...
Any other example in which your work pushed back against, you know, domination or the duopoly or anything in relation to the telecom sector that... I'm looking, you know, managers sometimes must just remain managers.
Yes.
So what is your niche that calls you to this high calling now? Sell yourself.
Okay. The end user regulation on data expiry, on rollover of data, that's work that was done by my division in collaboration with other divisions. No, I'm not.
You are. I've been part of these processes, my man. The institution had to be pushed, kicking and screaming, towards the direction of, and I mean, I don't think ICASA actually initiated any of that.
No.
Not at all. You see, my point is this. You'll be sitting with the captain of Indus, and he'll be harassing you, you'll be like,
Well, I've answered you. I said to you,
with the greatest respect. Yeah.
So please give him the chance to answer.
Okay, I'm providing you a context. I apologize in advance. My problem with taking an ICASA manager and making them a counselor, it's in the same body, in the same institution. You must have shown some leadership. So your biggest test is not whether you understand the industry or not. Your biggest test is whether you can be a leader or not. Counselor people are leaders. They get lobbied, they get bribed. If you listen to the testimony at the commission today, part of the problems that related to multi-choice domination had to do with people being bribed, some of which were in cast. So I'm looking for you to tell me about leadership.
Yeah, so
and one of the signs is you challenging something, them harassing you in there, and you standing a ground. Not always, you know, theoretical. It's not an academy, it's a regulator that must fight back. So it's in that context that I'm sort of raising this challenge. I hope you'd appreciate it, because I'm trying to be persuaded, you see. So when you were born, I convinced these comrades that indeed you are a leader.
And I believe that I am a leader because I've led, you know, really sizable investigations in my life. Now the issues of whether I guess I've got the stamina to handle pressure. I think I pride myself in being a professional, and I pride myself in actually looking at what the law says and doing what the law says. You know, I'll give you an example. I know you were talking about ICASA in this context. But I'll tell you that I've led, you know, investigations where, you know, you had big implications, big fines for players. And because I look at things in a professional manner. You know, I led an investigation that actually led to fines being levied on operators. You know, so now whether do I have the backbone? Because I think I hear your question to be, do I have the backbone or not? I do, because you know, I'm a professional. I pride myself in the work I do, and I wouldn't risk that for anything. I work hard.
I put it to you, it's my last challenge. I put it to you that professional is not leadership. I mean, there are many professionals out there. Some of the professionals, they stick to their professional role. There are many professionals under apartheid. That's why it civilized so much. But they didn't see the problem with the moral obligation and the ethical responsibilities of defying unjust laws. Leadership is something more. And my problem with middle management people is that call. Chapter 9 institutions are fighters. And they must fight injustices in the industry in the interest of democracy. I told you that I'm not convinced you have given me that. You are saying I did investigation. You can't even give me one and show me the implications in which you stood your ground against the big player. Competition Commission always finds people. I get that. But you see my difficulty, and I'm done.
Yeah.
But that's my difficulty here with the manager, policy, then just improving you like that. Sure.
Well, just to answer, well, I guess I wouldn't have gotten that opportunity if I was not at council. Because for me, to show you that what you're looking for, what you're asking for, is that, you know, because the eventual final decision maker of the authority is the council. So, but I think I've applied myself very well in areas that I've been responsible for. Thank you.
Honorable Mlash.
Thanks, Chair. Mtunga, how are you, Mtunga?
I'm fine.
All right. Mine is a very short one. It's not long. I'm not going to make a speech. Yes. There is this information that we got that there's limited research activity in ICASA, and you have just mentioned one aspect of research. So I want you to confirm whether, because this was raised in the context of lack of resources, underfunding, and so on. There's also a protracted litigation. Largely by the industry. And you also, there's also information that broadcasting is still licensed under ICASA, but as they converged with the two, IBA and what do they call it, the other one? But still licensed separate. And whether you are in favor of the convergence of similar entities, or what would be your view on that? Looking at, you can still combine all of them, the film industry will do this on their own, still in one entity. What will be the impact of that? If you can just respond to those two questions for me, I'm okay.
Thank you. So, I think the issue of, I'll start with the issue of convergence. So the issue of convergence, you know, if you look at the ICT policy white paper, it's actually talking about creating two entities, creating an economic regulator and a content or broadcasting regulator. And I think, and that's my also my personal view, is that if you then are talking about convergence, you actually, what we did, what was done when the IDA and SACHA were merged was so that we can deal with issues of convergence. So now when you go back and you now again split the content podcaster from the economic regulator, you're actually going back again. So in other words, you are not appreciating the fact that convergence has actually happened. So that's how I would answer that question. And then regarding the issue of resources and research, the point I was making is merely this, is that the industry that we regulate is fast moving. It needs a regulator that can at least try to keep up with it. That does not say that there's no research happening in Rica. There's a lot of research happening in Rica. But the issue is there's also research. That's why I framed it by saying it's R&D. It's research and development. It's research that's going to, it may not, for example, immediately show or produce anything, but it could actually inform what is coming in the next 2 to 5 years or so. Because you want to also keep up with what is happening in the industry. So that's the brief answer I can give to that question.
You have not completed the question.
Sorry.
Litigation?
Oh, litigation, yes. Yeah. So the issue of litigation, I would say that that's something that is not necessarily, because I see the industry that we regulate as very litigious. By nature, I've found it to be like that. And so, I don't know, ICASA can only have, I guess, to provide it with the resources to challenge that litigation. But if you publish a regulation and someone takes you to court, it's not, you can't control that. All you need to do is to make sure that the regulation that you've put out has checked all the legal requirements, you know. But you can't stop a industry from actually litigating against you.
Yeah, no, it's okay. But there are other ways of reducing litigation without necessarily just challenging. You can also engage with them and find common ground before you publish so that there's limited litigation. Thanks, Chair.
I think the question has been answered. Maybe just one point, just go back to the point you've raised about increasing the reach in terms of people accessing as a way of addressing the concentration by the operators. And you mentioned national roaming as another way of dealing with that. If one was to ask the question, why have you left national roaming arrangements to more self-regulation than intervening as a regulator?
Thank you very much, John. Well, I think currently the regulatory framework has not actually captured, has not required national roaming to be regulated. It has been seen as commercial arrangement. However, national roaming has competition implications. So, a personal opinion is that you actually want to regulate national roaming. So that, for example, you look at issues around the rate at which that access is provided to other players. You know, you need to be able, as a regulator, you need to be able to have sight of that. they need to be able to, you know, to promote that by actually looking at whether is it fair, is the pricing fair, because, you know, it's an important tool as well for expanding coverage. So the regulatory framework as it is now does not capture it for regulation. As I say, those are treated as commercial arrangements. But, yeah.
One thing that is considered, I'm raising it because if you had policy, you already see that there's a gap here. And any recommendations that
yeah, so
considered in advancing your personal opinion?
Yes, yes. So you'll see that in the discussion document that we published on our review of broadband services, that issue is actually touched upon. But also the Competition Commission, in its final market review as well, also touches on roaming as well. So you'll see that it is something that is in the radar, at least for consideration for regulation.
That takes us to the end of the session. Thank you for engaging with us. But of course, I give you also time to just wrap up in terms of what you want to understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. As I said, I think when I first started, I thank you for inviting me. I think it's an experience. So I'm glad I've gone through it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Smith. For all our administrative related matters.